On this 14th day of February, 2011, in San Diego, we are reading from the Bhagavad Gita as it is, translation and commentary by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. We are in Chapter 18, The Perfection of Renunciation, text number 57. Chetasa sarvakarmani
Chetasa sarvakarmani
Mayi sanyasya matparaha
Mayi sanyasya matparaha
Buddhi yogam apashritya
Buddhi yogam apashritya
Machitta satatam bhava
Machitta satatam bhava.
In all activities, just depend upon me and work always under my protection. In such devotional service, be fully conscious of me. Purport. When one acts in Krishna consciousness, he does not act as the master of the world. Just like a servant, one should act fully under the direction of the Supreme Lord. A servant has no individual independence. He acts only on the order of the master. A servant acting on behalf of the Supreme Master is unaffected by profit and loss. He simply discharges his duty faithfully in terms of the order of the Lord. Now, one may argue that Arjuna was acting under the personal direction of Krishna, but when Krishna is not present, how should one act? If one acts according to the direction of Krishna in this book, as well as under the guidance of the representative of Krishna, then the result will be the same. The Sanskrit word matparaha is very important in this verse. It indicates that one has no goal in life save and except acting in Krishna consciousness just to satisfy Krishna. And while working in that way, one should think of Krishna only. I have been appointed to discharge this particular duty by Krishna. While acting in such a way, one naturally has to think of Krishna. This is perfect Krishna consciousness. One should, however, note that after doing something whimsically, he should not offer the result to the Supreme Lord. That sort of duty is not in the devotional service of Krishna consciousness. One should act according to the order of Krishna. This is a very important point. That order of Krishna comes through disciplic succession from the bona fide spiritual master. Therefore, the spiritual master's order should be taken as the prime duty of life. If one gets a bona fide spiritual master and acts according to his direction, then one's perfection of life in Krishna consciousness is guaranteed. Om Jnana Timurandasya Jnanandana Shalakaya Chakshu Unmidatam Mena Tasmai Shri Gurave. I was born in the darkness of ignorance. My spiritual master, Srila Prabhupada, opened my eyes with the torchlight of knowledge. I offer my humble obeisance unto him and all members of Sri Parampara. So Krishna is winding up his instructions now in the Bhagavad Gita, and he's speaking purely about pure Krishna consciousness. And all the way from 55, he's described the wonders and the benefits of acting under his direction in bhakti. First of all, bhakti amama mijanati yavanyasasmi tatvada, to know Krishna in truth, one has to be a devotee. Krishna reveals himself proportionally to one's sincere devotion, the intensity of one's devotion. And then one can enter into the spiritual world at the time of death. In 56 and 57, he's specifically talking about acting, he's about activities. Now, it's not just that in previous chapters he talked about giving the fruits of the activity, but he's not talking about that now. The actual activity is meant to be done in Krishna consciousness. There's a distinction between like karma yoga and pure bhakti yoga. In karma yoga, you understand that your duty is to perform sacrifice and that you should give as much of the fruits of your labor to Krishna. And that's spoken of in chapter 3. This is all very good because such sacrifice gets rid of previous karma, of bad karma, good karma, and it doesn't incur any new karma. So you're liberated to that degree. And gradually you can increase your knowledge of Krishna and come to the point more and more of thinking of him while you do your activities. But this is already on the pure platform that he's talking about here at the end of the 18th chapter. Sarva karma nyapisada kurva no madvipashya. Work under my shelter, under my protection. Do all your activities. And then by my grace, by my mercy, one will come to the eternal realm. This is really dynamic yoga. This is how to live in this world and still be a perfect yogi. The idea is to, at every step, to be under the shelter of Krishna, thinking of Krishna, working for him, and one will achieve the eternal, imperishable abode, Krishna Loka. Now, in the present verse, he's saying that if you act in this way, mai sanyasya matparaha, this Prabhupada says matparaha, this is a very key word. Like in certain verses, you'll hear narayana parayana. It's the same idea. Narayana parayana, it's very poetic. It means having Narayan, or the Supreme Personality of Godhead, as one's sole and only goal in life. That's the top priority. Everything else is secondary. That's what matparaha means. Is that this is a result of faith. Real faith is defined by Krishna's Kaviraj, or quoting Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, Shraddha Shabde Vishwas Kore Sudhadhanas Choy Krishna Bhakti Kore Sava Karma Kritohoi. That real faith means to have the firm conviction that just by the activities of Krishna consciousness, of bhakti, all my goals will be achieved. You can see how faith and surrender go hand in hand. Because the elements of surrender include being confident that Krishna will protect and Krishna will maintain. So you can see how the Pandavas perfectly exhibited this. Even in the greatest difficulty, they were exiled, they were in the forest, they had no army, they had no shelter, they were being hunted by Duryodhana and company. They still didn't lose their faith in Krishna. They had faith that he would protect them in the final analysis, you know. So, Chetasa Sarvakarmani Maisanyasamapala. Buddhi Yoga. Now, this is a theme from a previous chapter. This Buddhi Yoga comes in the second chapter, and it comes in the tenth chapter. Tesham Satata Yuktanam Bhajatam Priti Purgam Dadami Buddhi Yogam Tam Yena Mama Pihantite. That Krishna gives the intelligence by which we can practice this Buddhi Yoga. So, Prabhupada identifies Buddhi Yoga with Bhakti Yoga. Because Bhakti Yoga means really the best use of one's intelligence. And you know, something that I always like to point to in this regard, in chapter 6, we can turn to chapter 6, text 20. I think it's 20 to 23 there. Yeah. Krishna is describing samadhi, right? Yatro panamate chittam nirudham yoga sevaya. In that state of samadhi, the senses are completely withdrawn from the sense objects. And when through the purified mind, the soul perceives the supreme Atma, the super soul. Pashyan Atmani Tushiti, within oneself. So he's having a vision of the super soul. You can see the yogi. Sukham Atyantikam Yatad Buddhi Grayam Atindriyam. You see the word buddhi comes in there. That he experiences the highest happiness experienced with transcendental senses through the intelligence. I think that's mentioned in the translation here. In that state, one is situated in boundless transcendental happiness realized through transcendental senses. But the idea is that the intelligence is fully engaged. And then he goes on, you know, once you're in that position, you never want to leave it. Having attained it, you don't think there's any higher gain. Even in the greatest difficulty that you're able to tolerate, there's no difficulty at all. This is really the ending of all misery by the process of yoga. So, personally, I find, and you will find in Krishna consciousness, the more that you apply your intelligence, just like for instance, deity worship. There's so many details in deity worship, beginning with cleanliness, you know. But there's so many mantras, so many vibrations, so many things to know. So you need to apply your intelligence to do it intelligently. The more intelligence you're applying, the more pleasing it is to Krishna, and the more spiritual bliss you're experiencing. And so this intelligence is all important, applying the intelligence. That's why I always like to, maybe we can actually review tonight, the prayers that we sing every morning. Srila Prabhupada set up this morning program, you know, which is very wise. It actually developed, you know, some of you don't know that. It developed over time. When Prabhupada first began his movement, there was no Mangalarti. There was no Bhagavatam class, you know. There was no Guru Puja. Those things developed over time to what we have today, which is a perfectly balanced program. But the more that you apply your intelligence to each element of that, especially the rounds, you know, the concentration of the mind on the holy name, concentration is a function of your intelligence. It is said that when you lose your ability to concentrate, the mind is lost. You're practically hopeless. You know, you're in a mad condition. Our ability to focus and to absorb this knowledge and to apply it with intelligence is really a great blessing, you know, to have that. And so when we chant the when we sing these what we call the Gurvashtaka, eight prayers to the spiritual master, or the song that we sing later to the spiritual master, the more that you know the meaning of the words, how they're fitting together, and how you're applying them, you know, to your own experience. Like, you know, Guru Mukha Padma Vakya Chite Te Koriya Aika Arna Kodiya Monehasha. That one phrase, Guru Mukha Padma Vakya, from the lotus mouth of the spiritual master coming these words, Vakya, Guru Mukha Padma, Chite Te Koriya Aika, make your consciousness one with that. In other words, focus and Arna Kodiya Monehasha. Don't desire any other vibrations. You see? This is what it means to, you know, be surrendered to a spiritual master. You know, just like Arjun, he's surrendering now. At the end of this, you know, a few verses hence, he'll say, Kadashe Vachanantada. Yes, Nashta Moha Smita Labda. I have my moha, my illusion has been destroyed by your words. I've regained my memory of the right thing to do, and I will do as you say. You see? So you think his mind was wandering when Krishna was speaking these words? Not one iota. He was completely focused in asking the questions, getting the answers, you see? And then he's ready to apply his intelligence, overcoming this impulse from his, you know, lower self to react on a visceral level with his bodily relations. You see, that's, you know, the whole idea. So this Buddhi Yoga means the intelligence applied in Bhakti Yoga, you know, at every moment. And Krishna gives us more and more facility for that, the more that we surrender. Tesham Satati Yuktanam. If we're trying to worship Him with devotion, we're trying to do a certain service, at first, everything is covered by a fault. He said, like a fire is covered by smoke, a few verses before. But if we continue with determination, gradually everything becomes perfected by our application of intelligence. The rounds become better, our service becomes better, our experience becomes deeper, you know, because of the clear mind and the clear intelligence. So Buddhi Yoga, Upashritya, taking full shelter of me, Machitta Satatam Bhava. There it is in a nutshell. Be conscious of me always. Be always conscious of me. So let's see what Prabhupada says. It's a little bit in the purport here. Now, this idea of taking one's, you know, at every moment, one's impetus for action from Krishna, you know. At every moment, there's a Krishna conscious way of doing something and there's a mayic way of doing it. You know, basically, if you forget Krishna, forget His orders, forget His desires, then you'll be acting in illusion. And that's to our own suffering. It doesn't hurt Krishna. It's our loss to do that. So you can imagine being always Krishna conscious. You know, Prabhupada was the perfect example. From morning to night, you could see, whether he's answering the phone, speaking to somebody, doing bhajans, dictating, dealing with business, writing letters, taking prasadam, everything was done in a perfectly Krishna-conscious way. You know, you could see that. And that's, he's always ecstatic. You know, he was at a very high level. Everyone could sense that. You know, that's why they wanted to, you know, that's one of the reasons why he wanted to do this process, to get some of that, you know, to be like that. So that's full God consciousness, realizing that you're, you know, a servant of Krishna. Now, you know, in our materially illusion mind, immediately rebels at that, at being a servant. You know, we want to be the master. That's the false ego. But look where it's gotten us. Are we really the master? To what degree can we really be the master of this world? We're completely dependent on this body working from moment to moment, on, you know, the air, the temperature, enough water, the food, other people. We're so dependent already. You know, so why not understand the supreme dependence rather than trying to, you know, to create our own little area of control, you know, and ultimately be defeated again and again in this lifetime. It's so natural. We're serving anyway. The illusion, being a master is completely an illusion. You have to serve. Either you're going to serve your body, you're going to serve your mind, you're going to serve your misconceptions, you're going to serve your wife, your dog, your boss. One way or another, you're going to serve. So the question is, with our intelligence, to decide who we're going to serve. Are we going to serve Krishna or are we going to serve Maya? And one, you know, it's night and day. There's no contest. Serving Krishna produces a life of you know, even in this world, what to speak of the other world, you can be happy and peaceful, you know, in all circumstances. Even amongst the greatest difficulty, you can keep your composure and understand Krishna's with me. So that's what he's saying. In all activities, just depend on me. Work always under my protection. In such devotional service, be fully conscious of me. This is exactly like the mission statement of the Hare Krishna movement. This is what Prabhupada wanted ISKCON to be. A society wholly and solely, you know, of souls who are training and to serve Krishna and serving Krishna and spreading this wonderful science. Any questions on this verse? Yes, Ben.
You mentioned quite a bit about the intelligence.
Yeah.
Being a part of the soul body. Earlier in the sixth chapter, Krishna's stressing like the mind, like the
in the sixth chapter. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. The fact that the mind can either be your best friend, your worst enemy. And then you mentioned a little bit about the false ego. So, is it that we don't have an option of like giving up the false ego? So we need to take on like pride and like, you know, like the real ego of like the servant of the servant of the servant of the servant, is that how
there's all kinds of strategies, and as we've been given a system, a practice regimen by which we can purify all these things, you know, the senses, the mind, intelligence, and the ego. There is spiritual way of using your senses, your mind, intelligence, and ego. And that's the natural way. That's what it's supposed to be. So, when, you know, remember at the end of the third chapter, when Krishna was talking about lust, right? He talked about the buddhi, evam buddhi, padam buddha, samstat yadaman, jahishatta maha kamarupam darasadam. He's saying, with the intelligence, understand that you're transcendental even to the intelligence. So when Krishna talks in the sixth chapter about controlling the mind, what are you going to control it with? With the intelligence. Intelligence has to be strengthened by hearing and by the practice, you know, of meditation, by chanting, and especially by association through the direct words of the spiritual master or printed word, whatever, devotees, so that the intelligence is strong, it becomes stronger, and the will becomes stronger. So that when the mind or the senses are pulling you here and there, and they will, because it's their nature and we're habituated or conditioned to do that, you can direct them in the proper way. That's why, you know, and a lot of it is as if, meaning, I'm not so humble. I know I'm infected with this false ego, you know. Let me bow down. The physical things you do, so, you know, affects the mind. If you bow down, you bow down to the deities, you bow down to the spiritual master, you bow down to the senior devotees, you physically bow down. That helps to chip away at this mountain of the false ego, you know. The clothes you wear, you know, it's a big deal. Because, you know, if you walk in here, you know, someone walks in here with dressed to the nines, you know, with the haircut and everything, that's, and then they're going to sit for Bhagavad Gita? Probably not. But the point is, it all has its effect. The tilak, the association, the what you eat, you know, beyond just our understanding how it works, these things are working at a very deep level. So if you act humbly, you act, you know, as a menial servant, even though you may not understand or feel, you know, bliss doing it in your natural, you'll gradually come to the realization that you are a servant. You see, so this is some of the techniques, but this key word sincerity, you know, it's hard to get around it. One has to be sincere. He or she really has to have a desire to improve. And then Krishna from within gives you the impetus to act in the right way and to avoid the wrong things. You know. And from without, he's coming as the spiritual master and the sadhus and the shastra. We have all facility. But if the living entity is so stubborn, you know, that he wants to shine it on and wants to just ignore, then it's the old rabbit, you know, with the head in the sand. You can live like that for a short period of time until the lion comes, you know, until the death comes and gets you. You can't, it's not a successful strategy to ignore it. So really, you know, and I've seen this again and again, You know, there needs to be. You just see someone just takes to it, and naturally, you know, and others. Although so much exposure, it doesn't take. There have to be assets from a previous life, I think. You know, something has to go on for someone to be interested in this and see the reality. You know, so it's a the intelligence should be applied through study, through hearing, through contemplation. You know, thinking deeply about the subject matter, and then doing. You know, actually willing oneself to act according to the knowledge, even if the feeling isn't there. You know, ultimately, you know, you have these three elements: the thinking, willing, feeling. You know, and really, they're also the mind and intelligence too. Thinking certainly is the mind. So I don't feel. You know, often as we don't feel like doing what we're supposed to do, or we really feel like doing something we know we're not supposed to do. Right? I mean, that's what it means to be conditioned. But if you've strengthened the will by applying the intelligence to this knowledge and acting properly previously, then when those waves of feeling comes, you know, despondency or whatever, you can go through it. You can overcome it. You know, just like you have like a military, you know, if you're in the military, as soon as you get in there, right away, you know, they're conditioning you. You know, getting in your face, breaking down your independence, you know, and getting you to the point where you're able to will yourself to do something that may end in your injury or death, right, for the higher cause or whatever, you know. So it's like that, you know. This is, but this has to be completely voluntary. Otherwise, there's no question of any love developing. So, you know, we've got all facility, and we can apply it. Any other comment on this particular verse?
Yeah, Prabhupada also in that last verse of third chapter, he calls it spiritual intelligence, and in parenthesis he says Krishna consciousness. And that's what he equates to Krishna consciousness.
Yeah, Buddha yoga, right?
And then he also says in the verse another definition for that is steady intelligence directed towards one's pure identity.
Yeah,
act on that way. Always remember you are part and parcel of Krishna, and in that hierarchy you are sitting above the intelligence. Those are all your instruments. You have to understand that's who you really are and act on that basis.
Exactly.
Always.
And it's interesting that the next chapter begins with Krishna talking about how he spoke this yoga. Imam vivasade yogam. So there's a process of yoga by which one can strengthen the intelligence to conquer over lust. It follows. And that process of yoga is, of course, you know, ultimately bhakti yoga. But he's speaking about knowledge, about you know, strengthening the intelligence through exposure, through hearing. To this science. Okay, let's go on. Oh, you want to say something? Go ahead, Ashish.
So this point, I'd like to frame as well. Said, what happens when Krishna is not present? And Prabhupada is saying that according to the book, and he used as well as, not or, like, as well as under the guidance of representative.
Yeah.
It's
yeah.
Not like book or this. You can, sorry.
Right.
You
need
to follow the book, but you have,
to have the guide. You have to have the guide. That's Krishna's prescription, you know. If you want to follow, I just follow Krishna. I don't. But what Krishna says is you have to approach a spiritual master. So how can you follow Krishna and then, you know, rebel really at having a personal guide? It's illusion, and Krishna doesn't agree. We have to always remember it's his own sweet will whether he reveals himself to us. If Krishna, you know, if Krishna doesn't, if you're not engaging in the process according to his prescription, you're not getting anywhere because it's entirely a personal thing, you know. It doesn't depend on some, you know. It doesn't depend on our doing A, B, C, and D. A, B, C, and D are just a way of getting, you know, Krishna's mercy. It is entirely unto him whether he gives us anything. So we have to find someone and have that intermediary. That's just the way it is. All right, let's go on. These verses all go together. Machitta sarva durgani,
machitta sarva durgani,
matprasada tarishyasi,
matprasada tarishyasi,
atachetvam ahankaram,
atachetvam ahankaram,
nashroshyasi vinamshyasi,
nashroshyasi vinamshyasi.
If you become conscious of me, you will pass over all the obstacles of conditioned life by my grace. If, however, you do not work in such consciousness, but act through false ego, not hearing me, you will be lost. Purport. A person in full Krishna consciousness is not unduly anxious about executing the duties of his existence. The foolish cannot understand this great freedom from all anxiety. For one who acts in Krishna consciousness, Lord Krishna becomes the most intimate friend. He always looks after his friend's comfort, and he gives himself to his friend, who is so devotedly engaged, working 24 hours a day to please the Lord. Therefore, no one should be carried away by the false ego of the bodily concept of life. One should not falsely think himself independent of the laws of material nature or free to act. He is already under strict material laws. But as soon as he acts in Krishna consciousness, he is liberated, free from the material perplexities. One should note very carefully that one who is not active in Krishna consciousness is losing himself in the material whirlpool, in the ocean of birth and death. No conditioned soul actually knows what is to be done and what is not to be done. But a person who acts in Krishna consciousness is free to act because everything is prompted by Krishna from within and confirmed by the spiritual master. So somehow this verse always struck me as kind of a seminal verse in the Bhagavad Gita, just summing up so much. Krishna's been, you know, speaking about so many different kinds of yoga, but it all boils down to being Krishna conscious, to being conscious of Krishna. And if you become conscious of me in the way he's just described, you will overcome all obstacles of conditioned life by my grace. So obviously this takes faith, you see. So you have that faith and to become Krishna conscious. But if you do not work as a conscious through false ego, not hearing me, you will be lost. So it's kind of an either-or situation there. You know, we can take up Krishna consciousness and have faith in Krishna and overcome the obstacle of conditioned life. Or we can ignore Krishna's words. We're free to act, free to do that. That's our freedom. But we'll be lost. In other words, we'll be lost in the whirlpools of the material world, and which we've been doing for, you know, millions of births. You're just lost. His whereabouts are unknown. You can go anywhere. You can be affected by any mode of nature. You can lose the human form of life, up, down, everywhere. You know. But this is the essence of the whole thing. So, let's see. Not unduly anxious about executing the duties of his existence. So this is real surrender. You know, is to have faith that Krishna will maintain. Now sometimes it seems impossible, you know, to do that, but we see, you know, the miracle of this movement, really, you know, with Prabhupada starting with nothing. Well, how did it get going? I mean, how did it actually prosper? How is it going on to this day? You know, you have so many people in this movement who are not primarily concerned, those who are full-time devotees, and there's thousands, about their maintenance, but it's being maintained. Well, we always have to remember that, you know, Krishna's in the heart of everyone. Right? As a super soul. So the first thing that happened, I'm going way back to 66. Well, how is it gonna go on? Well, okay. Somebody moved Michael Grant, then shortly thereafter known as Mukunda Das, and then Mukunda Goswami, to help Prabhupada, right? By getting the apartment. So you had these sincere people. Prabhupada was affecting hearts, right? The chanting and his own personality and the teachings, they felt touched. Right? Enough of them. Right? Many were not touched to that degree, but many, some were. To help him to get the first center. And then he was able to touch more hearts. And so some actually gave their whole life. You had professionals such as Satsu Maharaj and Rupanuga. They were working in the welfare of teachers or something like that. So they're living like brahmacharis, but they're giving their paycheck at a certain point. That's sustaining everybody. Some you had hippies just sleeping on the floor and taking prasadam, you know. But then they had... Yeah, and then, you know, gradually more people, because it's so attractive. Krishna's there, Prabhupada's instructions. So the point I'm saying is that we're worrying about the maintenance, but everything is already there and can be given, you know, to those who are full-time devotees. Those who are part-time devotees will find that their livelihood is going on. They live simply. They have more money to give to the temple. You see, that's not the problem. The problem is always becoming Krishna conscious. Krishna can give everything. You know, millions, there are millionaires out there. Their hearts can be changed. Ambarish was changed. You know, others were changed to some degree. The point is that it happens. But as soon as we think it's just me against the world, how am I going to, you know, eke out a living here? How am I going to struggle? You know, then it's you against the material energy, and you eventually lose that battle. You know, so really, you know, this verse is an act of great faith and surrender. That's part of surrender. Gokta dvevaranantata, to have full faith that Krishna will maintain. To work in Krishna consciousness. And then there, you know, devotees form businesses, there's ways of doing it, but always on the basis of Krishna consciousness, so nobody is trying to profit on somebody else, you know. The worst thing is for devotees to try to profiteer on Krishna consciousness or against other devotees. That's a sure formula for losing your taste and leaving. Guaranteed. We have a long history now, a 50-year history almost. I've seen it so many times. Make money on other devotees, you know, and cheat. Oh, boy. You know, Krishna doesn't like that. So this is the formula here, you know. Work under my guidance. You'll overcome all Savadurgani by my grace, conquer over it. And the ahankar, you'll be free from ahankar. But if you don't, you'll have ahankar, you're not hearing it. So the most valuable thing we have, is our attraction for Krishna, our taste for the holy name, just the desire to somehow, after a long day of work, to come here and sit and listen to the Bhagavad Gita. You know, there's only a few of us, you know. But the point is that treasure of your attraction to Krishna has to be cultivated. That is the creeper in the heart. That is we have to water, you know, through careful attending it and watering the hearing and chanting and not offending. And that eventually is the you know, takes us to the spiritual world. When that's matured, it becomes prema. At first, it's just some ruchi for the taste of everything in Krishna consciousness. Everything. You know, the deities, the paintings, the devotees, the prasadam, the service, the chanting. And that matures into actual attraction for Krishna. And it gets deeper and deeper into, you know, ecstatic experience and love. It's all a continuum. You know, so that's what's valuable in this world. Everything else is just dreck. It's just garbage. You know, it's a way of becoming distracted from that. Okay, any questions on this? We have to hear Krishna. What Tatranu he says, beginning of the 7th chapter. Yadahamkaram ashritya. Nayotsya iti manyase. Mityaisha vivasayaste. Prakritis tvam niyokshyati. If you do not act according to my direction and do not fight, then you will be falsely directed. By your nature, you will have to be engaged in warfare. Purport. Arjun was a military man and born of the nature of the Kshatriya. Therefore, his natural duty was to fight. But due to false ego, he was fearing that by killing his teacher, grandfather, and friends, he would incur sinful reactions. Actually, he was considering himself master of his actions, as if he were directing the good and bad results of such work. He forgot that the Supreme Personality of Godhead was present there, instructing him to fight. That is the forgetfulness of the conditioned soul. The Supreme Personality gives directions as to what is good and what is bad, and one simply has to act in Krishna consciousness to attain the perfection of life. No one can ascertain his destiny as the Supreme Lord can. Therefore, the best course is to take direction from the Supreme Lord and act. No one should neglect the order of the Supreme Personality of Godhead or the order of the spiritual master, who is the representative of God. One should act unhesitatingly to execute the order of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. That will keep one safe under all circumstances. So this is the alternative. By taking shelter, rather than taking shelter of Krishna, one takes shelter of the false ego. You see? Ahankaram ashritya. You're thinking, I will not fight. I will not serve Krishna. I will not chant Hare Krishna. I have the freedom to do that. You know, this is my desire. Yes, that's true. But that means you're falsely directed by your illusioned mind. That's a mitya, you know. And we'll still be engaged. We have to act in this world just to live, right? You have to do something. So material energy will engage you. You'll still be a servant, but you'll be under the illusion that you're some kind of master. You know? And this is what we've been doing for millions of births. So the way out of this is to recognize our actual nature, our swarup, as servants of Krishna. This is who we are. And if we act in that nature, we understand and we act, then the feeling for Krishna matures and arises. Now one note about the chanting. You know, the first direction is always chant Hare Krishna, right? How many times do we say Hare Bol in one day? That's imperative. Chant Hare Krishna. So that chanting, just the chanting, without anything else, even if you're not following any principles and you're not studying the Bhagavad Gita or anything, if you're just somehow chanting the holy name, even a little bit, that begins to change the heart. Because Krishna is so powerful. That's association with Krishna. Krishna is not a dead stone. He's got energies, and he's invested those energies in that holy name. So if we chant with a little concentration, then Krishna starts to change our heart, and we become interested. That interest is preliminary faith. That's what's called Adha Shraddha, preliminary faith. And so this is the blessing of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, to emphasize the chanting. He doesn't say, surrender unto me, and then not me. Krishna is saying, you surrender? If you not, then you'll be guided by false ego, and you'll be lost. You know, it's kind of a... Lord Chaitanya, just come and chant. Everybody, chant. We don't care what you did. How sinful. Chant Hare Krishna. You know, this is a great mercy. Now, in the chanting, of course, we find that there's a discipline involved, and that to chant purely, to come to the perfection, then there's so many do's and don'ts. But the point is that the chanting itself is the means by which you can get the spiritual strength to follow all the other principles in advance. And that's how Prabhupada was able to plant the seeds of bhakti yoga in this middle of the Kali Yuga Western world. Because people were willing to come, and by his personality, his instructions, they were willing to begin chanting. And as soon as you do that, then everything flows from that. A few of the chanters took it seriously and pursued it and began chanting japa and so forth, and we can see the whole thing is growing on that. So, Padamvijayateshu Krishna Sankirtanam. The Krishna Sankirtan movement, the congregational chanting, will be victorious. Vijayate. It's just a question of how soon we're going to let it be victorious over us so that we can help it spread everywhere else. The chanting is going on. In all the problems that ISKCON went through, the Buddhist listing here and there in the history, I've seen it. The chanting is expanding. It always works. It always has its potency. Anyone who comes in contact with it can sense it. Even the people on, you know, the gas lamp, they can sense that there's something different here. The chanting is, they're doing something else. They may not know, but they're being purified. Okay, any final questions? Because I'm going to read a little bit from the 10th canto, from our reading. I'd like to throw that in.
I think the next one is related to the next verse.
Yeah, well, we can deal with that one tomorrow. We'll deal with that one tomorrow and go for it. Okay. So we'll now have a little bit of reading from the 10th canto. All glories to Srila Prabhupada.